Episode number 225 with Steve and Mike. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton.
This is Mike Snyderman.
How the hell are you, Mikey?
Not bad, Stevie. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. 225 episodes, my friend.
Very nice. Impressive.
Yeah.
You getting bored with this yet, Steve?
What's that?
You getting bored with this?
I'm not getting bored. I've noticed we haven't recorded as consistently as we have in the past. I think I'm getting sidetracked. This marathon is completely consuming me. But it'll be over in about a week. So I'm looking forward to putting this milestone behind me. You know?
Right. Well, I would say, yeah, I think people can do without once a week with this because we put out some pretty shoddy episodes just because you're in a hurry.
So, yeah.
But you definitely can't go more than a month or you start losing people. I've gotten some text messages. When's the next episode? You know what I mean?
So yeah.
I think that's like a month. You got to make sure at least you. That's my. And even if it became an average of only once every 2 weeks, that's still quite a bit of content.
True.
I think you're listening. Public would make that accept that compromise.
Yeah, I think that's about the right sweet spot. Is about a show every 2 weeks. Is this one went 3 weeks from the last one, but we're getting it out. I've been running a lot. I got a little more action on my time bet for the marathon. Andrew Pieper took 200 on me, so we got 220 on the over of 457. We'll see. I'm a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. I did 20 miles and it took me 4.5 and I was pretty ruined. So to think that I have to go another 6 and only have 27 minutes to do that is, I'm not going to lie, Mike, I'm a little nervous.
Right. Just nervous. Look around the crowd for the Ethiopian guy.
Yeah.
And just follow him.
Yes.
Keep up with that pace, Stevie. See how that works out for you.
Yeah. Look for the Kenyan guy.
Didn't Andrew say he might come up and watch this race?
He did. Yeah, I guess he's down by you.
Is he going to be anti-sweating you? I hope not.
I don't know. I guess we'll see.
So this we'll see. Is next weekend.
This is next weekend. Yeah, it's what today's Friday. So a little bit more than a week. It'll be the 8th of March. I also want to lose about 8 pounds in between now and then.
Well, yeah.
I think that'll help. That'll be 8 less pounds every step for 40,000 steps or whatever it works out to.
You're not supposed to be dieting before a race, though, are you?
No.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it works, obviously, but.
I'm this is my first one, really. I'm learning as I go, but apparently what you're supposed to do is I'm in the taper phase now, which means that I'm running a lot less. And that's designed so that you show up on race day and you're fresh. Most of the, as far as like long run, I did a 20 miler and that is essentially the hardest the training will be. And you're either in shape for the race or you're not by that point. So this taper phase is to kind of keep your body loose and limber by running, but you really reduce the mileage so that, you're not sore or, recovering on race day. And as far as diet, you're supposed to eat, at least from what I could tell, you're supposed to eat a little bit more protein than you were because your muscles have been worn down and they need to recover over these next couple of weeks. And amino acids and protein are the way to do that, at least from what I read. So I've been introducing a little bit more meat and eggs into my diet and a little bit less carbohydrates. And then a couple of days before the strategy, and this worked for me when I did the half marathon, is you up your carb intake. They call it carb loading. And so you eat a lot more carbs, less protein, and a lot of water. like 2 gallons of water a day for several days before. And then the morning of, I'll have a little smoothie a few hours before the race, and basically no water until the race. And then once the race starts, you drink, you know, a cup or so every mile and a half. And that'll cut out the bathroom breaks. You know, you don't want to have to take a leak every 45 minutes. That would really affect your time.
Right. You know?
So there's a whole technique to that too. But there's a lot to this, man.
It sounds like you sound prepared.
I think so. Yeah. I don't have any tattoos, and I'm 40 years old, but I think after this, I'm going to get a marathon tattoo. I think I've earned it. This has been a long road. And Oh, speaking of
ass tattoos.
What's that?
I said, speaking of ass tattoos, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Tramp stamps just above the waistline. Have you heard of David Goggins?
The name sounds familiar, but I don't know who that is.
He's a Navy SEAL. He wrote this book, Can't Hurt Me. I'm trying to get him on the show. I think he'd be really interesting. He started out as this guy that just came from a really bad upbringing. At one point, weighed over 300 pounds. Jeez. And lost over 100 pounds in 3 months. Joined the Navy SEALs, went through Hell Week 3 times, became a Navy SEAL, went through training with Delta Forces, made it all the way up until the last day, and then they cut him. Just got a hell of a story. And one of the ones in there, I was listening to, ironically, the story when I was on my longest run, and he talked about how he was a Navy SEAL at this point. He had someone told him about a 100-mile race that he should enter. So he entered this 100-mile race 3 days before it started. He hadn't run further than a mile in the last 6 months up to this point. He had been one of those Navy SEALs that was just shredded and jacked in the gym, you know, doing a bunch of squats, deadlifts, and everything. Basically, he did everything that you could do wrong before entering a race.
Yeah.
He had not prepared for it. The night before, he worked out like a heavy deadlift squat session with his SEAL buddies. They drank a bottle of vodka, and then he woke up the next morning and did this race.
What the heck?
Yes, his diet during this race, he just had no idea what he was doing. Was Ritz crackers and like Muscle Milk or something. But he finished it. He did 100 miles in like 17 or 18 hours. I thought, after listening to that, I'm like, okay, if this guy can run 100 miles on no preparation, I could do a quarter of that. This shouldn't be that bad. But
yeah, that's a new thing. These ultra marathoners. I don't know if 100 miles is, this isn't such a unique event now, I guess, right?
That's what it kind of made me realize. I'm like, okay, if off the couch this guy, I mean, he is a Navy SEAL, so we got to give him that. But if this guy off the couch could do 100 miles, then, and another thing too is he did it on broken legs. He had these micro fractures in both of his shins, and he literally taped them up with duct tape. I'm like, that is a bad motherfucker right there.
Right.
That's impressive. I think he'd make a neat guest on the show.
And he slipped on the very first step of the race and had a massive head gouge on his head too. And he was taking enemy fire around mile 23. And around like mile 90, he made him listen to the Heads Up Book or podcast in his head. He almost just quit the race right there. But he's like, oh, fuck it. I got this close.
Yeah, he's got 225 episodes with a motivational speech at the end. How could he not complete it?
When did how did you stumble across this guy? In a podcast or
audiobook?
Audiobook. Okay.
Yeah, the audiobook. He's got him and his ghostwriter. It's almost kind of like a podcast format. Like his ghostwriter reads a chapter. And then the two of them talk about it for 10 or 15 minutes afterwards. So you kind of get a little backstory, you know, behind it that you wouldn't really find in the book. It's really good. I'm listening to it for the second time, actually.
Sounds definitely like a Barton-esque character, someone self-improvement, adventurer.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. How about you? How you been?
130-100 last night, so life's good, Steve.
You won what?
I won 3,100 playing poker.
Nice.
Well, so pretty, that's a very big night for me.
Yeah, that's a big night.
I mean, all I would have had to done was lose a 6-game pot the other night, leave, and you know, I'd be telling you the world is coming to an end right now. You know how that swings?
Yes.
Dramatically.
Right on. You still putting in the hours? What are you up to for this month?
192 hours. I gotta play like 8 hours today. No, maybe 189 hours, whatever. But today I'm gonna get my rake back. You know, 200 hours is $1,200 there.
Okay, good for you. So you're not doing the 250 like you were.
I did last month. Of course, it's a shorter month this month. Yeah, I'd like to, theoretically, 200 a month should be fine if I'm got a decent win rate. But we'll see how that goes.
Okay. Oh, good. Do you feel good?
I don't know, Steve. I think the results have just been, I was going to give, I go on some, that's right, when you're talking about the fitness thing, the one exercise I could do when I was losing, because I'm trying to lose the weight again, is swimming. And my shoulder is just so jacked up, I can't even do a stroke.
Okay.
So in terms of feeling good, yeah, I've been walking every morning, but I was getting very excited about losing weight and the exercise, you know, when I did that, lost the weight before, I was swimming and everything, and I can't do that. So, but yeah, I'm not really doing anything different. My rule of not getting high until I'm in some sort of pain, I think I've been sticking to pretty good.
Good.
And good. Managing the doses, so I haven't, been totally out of it. Other than that, I think, I had a couple of hands to go over, which maybe I would play a little different today than a year or two ago. Maybe shows why I'm doing okay.
Okay.
I don't know if we want to do some hands and then go back and talk about life. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, let me look it up quickly. Where are the two hands I wanted to show you? Okay, this one last night.
Okay.
I have $3,300 and I have Pocket Aces UTG2.
Okay, what is it? 5-5?
It's 2-5. And the under the gun player who has $850 to start, so 850 effective.
Okay.
5X is it to 25 under the gun.
Okay. UTG 1 folds?
Yes.
Okay, and now it's on Hero.
Not a lot of pretty. Not nobody's going to squeeze light at this table.
Okay.
If there was, maybe I flat here, but against an under the gun raiser. I'm hoping. Obviously, I think he usually has a fairly strong hand. This is kind of I put just average rec here, but I would say definitely towards the nittier side. He hadn't been playing a lot of hands. I've never played against the guy before.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Kind of watching his TV, watching a movie and just picking up. And yeah, basically only playing good hands. So he, I made it 3X, $75, pretty standard.
Okay.
Maybe with six people behind me before this guy, or maybe a little bigger, you want to go? Just so you don't.
I was going to say 85 to 110, just because he's under the gun. You described him as nitty. I'd make it a little bit bigger. I think I've got the Alex Fitzgerald Master Tournament Poker running around in my head, but I think 85 would be his minimum here.
I think it's okay. Yeah, I think he's probably calling, especially he's got a strong range and he's probably calling with all of it. So a little bigger. I think 110's a little high.
Yeah, that might be a little
more. That might kill. You want him to call with some of the hands you have dominated, especially those ace-x hands.
Yeah.
He calls. Everyone else folds.
Okay.
And the flop is the 9 of clubs, the 8 of clubs, and the 4 of hearts.
Okay. And what's our suit?
We have 2 black aces.
Okay. So we have the ace of clubs.
Yeah.
All right. So 150, 155 in the pot, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And UTG?
He checks.
I was thinking like a little down bet, but I don't know why. I don't know, maybe about the same, 75, 80, something like that.
I did down bet it a little bit, $65.
Okay.
Again, you know, the down bet's kind of fashionable, even in cash. So I guess for consistency, you know, I'm just follow the trends. Although, again, in this particular spot, when his range is pretty strong, he's either going to have a, you know, follow through range or not. He's either going to have tens, jacks, queens, you know, some pair. I could see maybe going a little bigger, but we don't have to go bigger to get the stacks in.
True.
Because, you know, 775 to begin. If I bet, I can only bet 65 here, 200 on the turn, shove river, you know, for a pot size bet or whatever.
Yeah.
So I bet 65 and he calls.
Okay.
Do we want to stop and try to range him here? What do you think kind of hands he has? I don't know. He there's a lot of hands he would continue with the call the
All is I mean, is he checking tens plus there? Probably, right?
I would think so. I would be surprised if he has a leading range. I don't know. Maybe some players, if they had a set or a flush draw, would lead. Yeah. I guess he could lead with kings if he thought he was trapping.
Okay.
But, you know, he checked. Yeah, I didn't take too much out of his range. Like, right away, I was thinking, like, tens, jacks, queens. He had a lot. And now, yeah. I guess, there's definitely club combos in his range, too.
Yeah.
And he might be calling with just ace, you know, ace, king, queen of hearts or something like that. You know what I mean? Just back doors. But I didn't think too much of it. The turn is the 10 of diamonds.
Okay.
10, 9, 8, 4, 2 diamonds. And he leads for $125.
The 285, he leads 125. I don't like this. Okay, I guess he's doing that with jacks. He's certainly doing it with the queen jack. Would he be doing it with something like king jack?
It's possible. I was worried about tens right away.
Yeah.
And I also thought about eights or nines. This is maybe how he plays them rather than, although most recs do not slow play their sets necessarily. You know what I mean? When my hand looks so strong, I think probably check raising would be the way that most players would play it, both rec and professional.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of it here, it's just I have aces. I'm not folding, right? I mean, that's not an option.
I was thinking this might be a fold.
He seemed to like his hand. I'll say that much.
There are stuff that we're beating here, you know, like I guess club draws, a lot of club draws with the 10 of clubs, I guess would make sense. You know, like, I don't know, king, 10 of clubs, stuff like that. He can't have the ace of clubs, which makes this interesting.
I think does he play jacks this way is an interesting question. Or with jacks, is he just happy he picks up more equity and he can check call without having to stress himself out kind of thing?
Now, he's never calling this. He's never check calling this flop bet with like sevens, right?
I don't know. We also have to mention the possibility of 7-6 suited. He probably, he might. I don't think he opens under the gun. I don't know. But that is another four combos we have to consider the possibility of.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
In which case, a
nitty rec would open that under the gun and then call off a stack of 850. That seems like a stretch. Although I've seen more strange.
Right.
Um,
basically, yeah. I mean, I'm not folding aces here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe right. Maybe it is a call with the club draw out there. I don't like that we have the ace of clubs, actually, because that takes a lot of those combos out of his range. So when he just open leads here, I don't know. I think I would probably quietly fold until.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't stop totally. A lot of the majority of the hands that he called the flop with, because my theory was he was going to raise sets, I'm still ahead of.
Okay.
That was my thinking. So I call.
Okay. 125. So we got 285. So we got 585 in the middle now.
My little app shows 537.
Oh, you're right. I forgot that 125 plus 125 does not equal 300. It equals 250. So you're correct.
The river is the six of diamonds.
Six of diamonds. UTG?
He leads for 200.
I mean, I guess he's got to bet his missed draws there. How much does he have behind now? Let's see,
$385.
Honestly, I probably would have tossed it on the turn here on the river getting to this point. I mean, okay, I guess pocket sevens got there.
Well, we only have to be right less than I put 200 in here to pull a pot of 937. So I don't have to be right very often.
No.
What do we beat? He seems, if my read is right, that he thinks he's good. What do I beat? Does he have jacks? Would you ever think he had kings or queens here?
I guess kings and queens,
both of them, he would be kings. I would think he'd raise pre, and queens he called pretty fast pre. So I kind of maybe put a few less extra, you know, big pairs in his hand.
Okay, I guess we beat Jack 10. I mean, would he think that? I can't imagine he'd think Jack 10 is good here, right?
Well, I mean, he could be. You know, it's hard to say. The guy could be acting too here. Right? I mean, I'm trying to go less off physical tells and talk and everything else. You know, hand ranges here.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't fast play his set. Binds eights and fours. He certainly has tens in his range.
Okay.
I mean, we didn't bring up the possibility here. I don't think we can turn our hand into a bluff here if for some reason we saw, because it's now, you know, four liner to a straight. I don't think that really changes anything for us.
It's tough for us to rip a seven.
I definitely think it's call or fold here. Shoving is not. I put him like, I'm narrowing a pretty range. I think he has six, seven, nines or eights or tens.
Yeah.
So much of the time. And I was trying to think, how does he play jacks or queens? And I thought he would be in check call mode.
I think so.
So I actually said, I'm like, jacks are no good. He's like, I know that. Will you show me? He's like, yeah, I'll show. So okay. I fold and he shows two red queens.
Oh, that's a stinger.
Right. I think I made the right fold though. Of all the hand, if you're just talking about range, you know, analysis. Yeah. I guess he thought he was the best. I guess when he leads the turn, he's like probing for information too.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he doesn't have aces or kings if he just flats here. I don't know. Getting such a ridiculously good price. But if it's like jacks, I think he might even not play jacks that way on the turn because, like I said, because now he has the straight draw.
Yeah.
So that might literally be like the only hands that he's playing that way that we beat. I could be. I mean, I think it's probably. I guess the fact I folded here and didn't really give a shit too much.
Okay.
I'm like, you know, the guy's just got too many. He just doesn't have any bluffs, and I don't think he does. as the actual hand.
I don't think so. I mean, like, so, is he, do you think he's calling there with like 10-9 suited? That could be a call that he might raise, call, make early position.
Well, that's 10-9 suited is two pair. That has a speed.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we're adding combos to shit that beats us now. 9-8 suited, 10-8 suited.
There is the missed club draw.
Yeah.
We got to throw that out there. I know we got the ace of clubs, but he could have the jack of clubs somehow. You know, the ace jack of clubs or whatever. Hit the straight draw to go with his flush draw. I don't. I think the price is too good with aces. Maybe you just got to say fuck it. But I don't think it's not a horrible fold. Not the worst fold I'll ever make, for sure.
True. Well, if we put ace jack, king jack, king queen in there, clubs, that's only three combos.
Right. Jack 10 of clubs. I don't know. But again, no, I don't think. And his bet size also seems kind of, when I say we, I mean, he's like scared of the straight a little bit here.
Yeah.
But he's also like, oh, my hand's too strong. I have to bet it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he still thinks it's the best hand. It's kind of like halfway, but he's a little scared sort of shit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that even screams set more.
Where, yeah. It looks like it just wants to get called.
Anyways, I don't know. Interesting. That's a fold I didn't make. I wouldn't probably make that often. I'm capable of making more often today, but I also have to be willing to get bluffed a little more. Here he wasn't a bluff. You know, I don't even know if there's a.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. No, I probably would have dumped it on the turn begrudgingly, but yeah. I mean, good on you for sniffing it out. Couldn't quite pull it off on the river, but I think that's a fold. Wouldn't have made that call.
Yeah. Again, cash game, you know, tournaments. I'm probably just, okay, fuck it. I mean, it's just, I got aces. Call. Next hand.
Okay.
Popular at our card room right now, especially amongst the day crew when I'm there, is the bomb pots. Have we discussed that?
Yes. Yeah.
We all put 25 in pre, and we don't play until the flop.
Okay.
So everybody's put a quarter in, and the flop is ace 4-3. And I look down at my cards. I'm in the big blind, by the way. Okay. And I see I have the five of diamonds and the two of hearts.
Well, that's pretty cool. Five of diamonds, two of hearts. You're in the big blind.
Small blind checks.
Was it rainbow flop or?
Yes.
Okay. All right, small blind check. And how many players were there? What do we have in the middle?
$225 in the middle. Nine players.
Nine players. Okay. Shit, man, that'd make it big. 200 to 250. Anyone could have anything at this point because there's been no action pre-flop. So guys could have aces, they could have fours, they could have threes, they could have 3-4, they could have ace 4, ace 3. We flopped the nuts. I want to get something. And our hand is very vulnerable. We do not want to see the board pair. We don't want to see a six. A five, those would be bad,
right? I make a pretty huge mistake. I was looking to check raise for some reason,
okay?
And so I just checked, and like I said, yeah, bad mistake. So often somebody has an ace, a hand they're not, you know, they're not folding,
mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where, yeah, if no one has an ace, then I'm probably not making any money this hand anyways, if somehow everybody misses it, you know?
Yeah.
So I should be betting. I don't. The guy next to me, who's been there a lot lately, I have him written down as crazy, his name. But, okay. This was the hand from a while ago. And now that I played with him, I don't. You know, one of those guys who's smart, the learning curve is pretty sharp for most players there. They realize if they're playing every hand, then they just got a bunch of vultures who are sitting around waiting to take their money. So very loose pre-flop, likes to play hands, but usually not any like wild bluffs from him is like my, I would say loose passive. Is that the way to describe that player? I guess a lot of hands, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
So
if he check raises you or something, you're nervous.
Yeah. Well, not here. Obviously I wouldn't be when I get the nuts.
No, not here, but I mean him in general, if he's just always calling and then all of a sudden the guy comes out raising, then usually loose passive players, when they raise like that, they got it.
But it checks all the way around.
Okay.
And the turn is the ace of diamonds.
Not ideal. Okay.
Well, potentially it is if someone has trips. But yeah, the small blind leads for 100.
All right. This might be a raise fold.
Well, the problem with Ray's fold, of course, is he could have just a naked ace and think he's good. So he's
how much is he up behind?
The guy who let out has about has 1900. He has us covered. The guy to our left has 2800.
Okay.
We had about 1400 to start the hand or something.
Okay.
I thought the play was the flat. Yeah, although we can raise and get called by worse for sure. But if I raise, it's going to be hard to fold there. But yeah, it probably is, because we played so many bomb pots, people are used to getting cooled, right? Trips is not the nuts. Like they said, you know, like a PLO hand, if it goes multi-way, you want to proceed without the nuts. So for that reason, I think it's just a call. This right, I'm like already pissed off that I'm did not bet the flop. I'm kind of in pot control mode here, you know?
Yeah, okay.
So I just call. And then the guy directly to my left, the loose passive player, just calls as well. And everybody else folds. So it's $525 in the pot. Mm-hmm. And the river is the five of clubs.
Okay.
Now, first of all, the first guy... I feel one of them has an ace, likely.
Mm-hmm.
The turn was the ace of diamonds, I should say this. So that gave two diamonds on board. There was a flush draw after the turn. Basically they both could have full houses here without seeing any action on the river, I think. But on the other hand, with the guy to my left, wouldn't he have bet? Well, I'll describe the action and kind of how I thought about it. The first player checks.
Okay.
On the small blind, it's on me, and I think I have to bet there.
Yeah,
for sure.
I don't know. I don't think you need to bet a whole lot. 150 to no. We want to get called. I think an ace is calling 300 there just as much as they are 125.
I think so.
Yeah, so maybe 325, 350, something like that.
I went pretty small. I went 240.
Okay.
Yeah, the guy, the original guy who let out for 100, who now checked here, I thought he likely has an ace, but it'd be kind of nervous about it. That's why he's checking here. He might be in check call mode, which maybe that's an argument for making it bigger, that he's already determined he's check calling. But so I bet 240, and the guy to my left makes it 800.
Hmm.
We don't beat some straights. We now have the third best straight, not even six deuce beats us, and so does 6-7.
Yeah.
Does he have full houses here? Does he have ace five in his range? Does he have, would he ever, maybe he was looking for the check raise on here's the thing. When it gets back to me, I'm like, ugh.
Okay. So like, small blind fold.
Small blind folds. It gets back to me. I got to call, again, a very good price. I got to call 560 to win a pot of which would be 2,100. So I only have to be right 25% of the time. You know, just going through the hands he has, I don't think he's bluffing. The worst hand he has is a straight, I think. But, you know, you can never be sure. He might just think my bet is weakish and his ace is good here too. But I think that's very unlikely. The problem is with full houses, isn't he raising the turn? And I think, yeah. I think he is. So I think he's ace four, ace three. I think he's raising the turn. So right now I'm like, okay, either as ace five or he has a straight.
Yeah.
And how many deuces or straights does he have? He's getting a great price when we each bet 100. So he's getting, if he's got a deuce in his hand or whatever he's got, or a five in his hand, I guess he can peel just to see if he can hit the straight. I mean, in this guy's mind.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if that's true, if he would only call there on the turn with a boat, like let's say at ace three, ace four, or fours or threes.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I've seen this guy and he raises a boat there. I'm like 95% sure. Yeah.
Okay.
So for him to have a boat now, he would need to have ace five.
Yeah.
You never know. Like I say, when I describe someone as loose passive, you know, it doesn't mean they're incapable of bluffing. Some guys will sit there for hours and then all of a sudden they'll play fucking the bluff a hand. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you see some, there's one guy fucking drove me nuts last night. He called, just flatted a four bet with kings and then folded for like when I underbet on like a 10-9 deuce board. It was three spades. He didn't have a spade. He had two red kings, but I had two aces.
Okay.
Like I won $250 that hand. It should have been 1400.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is this was a loose player who seemed to, who somehow played his kings cautiously, which maybe means that, you know, so here I decided best case scenario is I'm chopping.
Yeah.
That was my read, but it's just, I was confused. Why would he not raise a boat on the turn? And if I'm right about that, then am I supposed to call here? Because he can only have a straight or ace five.
I don't think so. I mean, you're calling to split.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was an easy fold.
Yeah.
I did fold and he flashed the deuce of clubs. So okay. he probably had ace deuce and his straight.
Yeah, that would make sense.
He didn't flop it. He would have been flop or raised, you know? I don't know if that's, again, I folded the winner. I mean, he could have had 2-6, I guess too. I didn't see that. That's much unlikely unless it was two, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Just an example, two hands I thought were interesting where I folded the winner on the river, but I thought my hand reading, thinking a little more deeply about it, it's one of those things where they happen to have, you know, in one case, the only hand I beat. And in this one, you know, like I said, I was playing for a chopper.
Yeah, no, I like it. I like the fold. Because if you're right, if he's not doing that there with three aces, then I think you got to let it go.
You know. Yeah, I think that's all I got. Hurry here, Stevie.
I don't know. Have you been watching the stock market lately?
I mean, I'm aware from listening to all the rich people I play poker with that there's been a blip in the road here.
Yeah, there's been quite the downturn.
Good.
Yeah, it's fucking exciting.
You rich fucks. Oh, you like this because there's option for.
Yeah, I'm basically waiting for, you know, at least what I perceive the you know, for it to level out, and then I'm gonna dump it back in. It's fun.
Okay.
So, I did move my retirement account. I had a bunch in the S&P 500 and a bunch of other stuff. And we have this one option where I think I'm probably the only guy in the department that does it. But we have a stable return account, which is guaranteed 3.6%, which I thought was pretty sweet. You're beating inflation by double. we can put it in that. It doesn't cost us anything to move it over. So I put 90% of my portfolio in that. And then the other left a couple of percent in each of the other ones. So basically waiting for it to level out, and then I'll dump it back into the S&P 500 again. We got a letter from Jacob Triba. He just wanted to give us a little update. He moved out to Denver. You guys remember Jacob Triba? I'm sure he's been on the show several times. Just a real whiz kid when it comes to poker. Really loves the data and, you know, running through all the software and everything. And he's gotten into some mixed games. And he started playing five-card PLO. And do you call that Big O in your casino?
Yeah.
Okay, we do too. Crazy Pineapple. And anyways, seems like he's doing well. Working a lot with PO Solver and all those programs. And
that's the story? He doesn't bang a stripper or win a trophy or anything?
None of that. None of that.
Step it up, Jacob, for God's sakes, man. I mean,
we want to hear about pasties.
I got to be honest. And I wasn't waking up this morning saying, I wonder if Jacob's playing any pineapple in Denver. Yeah.
We want to hear glitter strippers and caramel. No,
it's good to see that he's happy.
Yeah, he's doing well.
Quickly, Steve, to go back to this, rather than talking about the financial downswing, why don't we talk about the global pandemic that could kill billions waiting that's causing this?
I think that's one of the reasons that the market has dipped. I could be wrong. That's what they're saying. The reason is
the market is due for a dip at some point here, isn't it? I don't know.
I'm hoping this is the correction we've been waiting on. But we'll see.
Now, if this, they're pretty much saying it's inevitable this is going to start spreading in the U.S. a little bit.
I mean, think so, yeah.
Like, that would be the big hit to the economy, I would think. I mean, especially like New York. Like, yeah. If they clean the streets of New York and, you know, some sort of major. Either way, I'm guessing that'll be a bad day for the stock market when there's first confirmed death on U.S. soil.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people are assuming there, you know, is going to happen.
Yeah. The coronavirus. Yeah.
Of course, I don't know jack shit about it, but
I did a little math on the mortality rate. And from the last I heard, this was a few days ago, I think there was 85,000 cases and 2,600 deaths. So it was maybe 60. It worked out to like 1 out of 50 people. And so, yeah, 2% mortality rate.
The issue is how quickly it's spreading more than the death rate, though.
Yeah.
Because I've seen like the graphs, like the, you know, the Ebola, some of these things had like the little 30% incline, you know, moving around, you know what I mean? Where this thing really just, you know, thousands like fast, you know what I mean? From like 20 to, so the rate of its growth is as much a concern as, I mean, you know, it's got to be the global health organization can't be everywhere at once either. You know, start spreading everywhere, Africa, you know, North America at once.
Yeah. And I think they're quarantining.
Needless to say, Steve, this is one of those things that you and I are going to, Steve will be like, oh, thank God medicine's around to solve this problem. And I'm like, you know, how are the monkeys in control of this planet going to fucking make this worse? You know, I think we really don't have any option other than to trust technology. And we have some very smart people on it, money invested. And that's, I guess you just got to shrug your shoulders. And
yeah, I think that this is going to be no different than Ebola or SARS or bird flu or whatever else. It'll be a blip on the radar. And a couple months from now, we won't even remember it. You know, I could be wrong. Maybe not. I like that it's driving the market down a little bit. Because I feel
like, let's go back to the market, Steve.
I feel like everything's on sale. You know, I just listened to another investor book, and they're like, you know, downturns are good things. It means that everything's cheap.
Well, Steve, if for somehow this all caught, you know, this whole downturn in the economy, coronavirus. If it makes you $1 million and I die, can you like give me my son a $10,000 trust or something?
I could do that.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I know you would feel neurotic in that day. At my funeral, you'd be looking at your phone like, oh my God. The bounce back has begun.
Bye, bye.
This could, I don't, I mean, Trump is, it's hard to analyze Trump under any thing we've ever looked at politics before. It's so different. He can really say or do anything, and he's got such loyal followers, you know?
Yeah.
But he really sounds like, when he's blaming this on the media, he didn't blame it on the media, but he's going off because people are giving him, what are you going to do? And he pretty much said what you did. You know, we're working hard on it. You know, we're not worried. And when he keeps getting, but he's like, the media is just trying to embarrass this administration anyway. It's Ken. They're reaching for, you know. I would think this would be, if it did start spreading in the U.S., the Trump has to just deal with it as a crisis and do everything possible to end it. Would you agree with that? Without blaming it on, oh, the media did this and that and da-da-da. I mean, it's, for once, he actually has to be presidential, in my opinion, but I don't know.
What, I've got a few more bets on the Trump presidential run.
I've got three of them. I'm going to get fucked. I thought there was zero chance of Trump winning the popular vote after he lost it last time against kind of a weakish candidate, against, you know, a perfect storm he caught and still lost by a few million votes.
Yeah.
But now I don't know if Bernie's in there. So I got two bets for $100 with that just on the popular vote, and then another 100 on the election. So I thought this was I had a victory locked up with the popular vote, but I don't know.
You might. I don't know. I've got a few bets. One of them I lost, the impeachment bet. That was just my own damn ignorance. I thought impeachment meant that you're removed from office.
Just means that the House is decided to prosecute.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, shit. Okay. So I lost $300 there. I have another bet as far as his reelection.
That was also, remember, Steve, the time you went to the club, you didn't know what fisting was till it was too late.
Yeah, that was a painful lesson.
Okay,
very
sorry.
Painful. I got one for his reelection. If he's reelected, I win $400. If he's not reelected, I lose $100.
Well,
I got 4-1 on that. That's pretty good, right?
You get 400 if he wins, and you only lose 100 if he loses?
Yep.
Well, yeah, that's an amazing bet.
I thought so. Okay.
I mean, that's somebody who really doesn't like Trump who made that bet, I'm guessing. I don't know.
That's – you nailed that one.
who's just convinced and an optimist like you, and assuming the wheels of justice were –
We're true.
Yeah, that bet's not, but you made, I mean, the point of there is you made a, you know, you're getting your money in good there.
I think so. I think so. I think he's probably 50-50, right?
Yeah. Again, with the economy, I mean, if it was, the election was held today, I think Trump probably wins a close one, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Even against Bernie, though. But of course, you know, CNN is kind of, I guess you would say, was biased the same way Fox News. They're very liberal. But they were breaking it down that if Bernie wins the nomination, how close it'll be.
Okay.
And pretty much it's like, yeah, it's all coming down to, like, I forget, Ohio and Pennsylvania, you know, two states again. But they showed as, like, Trump and Bernie each having like 250 electoral votes locked up. So they already, you know, it's pretty much a close election guaranteed. You know, I don't know. I would think Bernie's not going to lose California and Texas, but I would think some of these, you know, more moderate states, you know, but they still have him pretty much having, like, a lot of places locked up.
Okay.
And Trump does too, of course. He wins over most of the South and most of all the small states in the West kind of shit. But it'll be in it. We actually have an election that matters for sure. I mean, we got two people. Whatever your opinion on. I mean, for entertainment purposes, I'm going to love it. I mean, there's going to be fucking fighting in the streets here.
I think what we saw before of these peaceful marches is going to be a thing of the past.
Well, we've already seen, you know, the Antifa, you know, anti-fascist group are, like, you know, attacking people and stuff. This could be, I don't know. I think it was somewhere, was it like San Jose? Did you see all these people who, this was a year or two ago, like the Trump rally, you know, of course, all these old white people coming from the suburbs or whatever, from come to town, and there's just a mob there, just, you know, cars getting smashed, guys getting beat up, you know what I mean? And okay. I think Trump, like, you know, during election time, he'll deliberately hold rallies in places where people will get attacked just to make a point. I think which would be savvy on his point to see, you know, to see his older electorate, you know, getting smashed by some young kids if that kind of shit goes on. But yeah, you must be terrified, Steve. Just all you got to do is just whisper the word socialism, and your heart starts racing. But if you actually, there's an actual honest to goodness socialist on the, you know, leading the ballot there, leading the ticket.
Yeah, it's, I got to admit, I'm paying less taxes now that Trump's in office, saving about 2 to 3% every year. So can't say I hate that. I do like money, and I don't like paying the government.
Right. So. Well, I mean, it's not just it's not like Bernie will just take 2% off either. He's got some radical proposals, which
I know.
May or not work, which may or not be right. I don't know. But yeah, as much as that's the thing with Bernie, as much as you can talk about, you know, all the injustices of the country and all the things they're doing wrong, and you know, it's all true, but you're like, you know, this is still a better place to live than just about anywhere else presently, or certainly in all of human history.
True.
So someone like Bernie, who does see it as like just inscrutably failed and like needing radical change, I'm like, well, you know, can we tweak a little of this, a little of that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's just it'll be fascinating here.
It I'm curious about I read a book or listened to it, I guess, Win Bigley, by the author of Dilbert cartoon, and he predicted Trump's win last election. Before it happened, actually over a year before it happened. And one of the things he mentioned in there that I won't forget is he said that a lot of the other Democrats' ads had a lot of Trump in them. And so Trump almost got free advertisement from the other side, because it wasn't necessarily like they're trying to win. It's like they're trying to defeat Trump, which kind of in a reverse psychology kind of way, you see ads for Trump, which has Trump all over it. You know, he's kissing babies. And then you have the other side, which is putting out these ads that also have Trump in them. And even though it's in a negative connotation, he's still getting screen time. And I see the same exact thing happening this time around. You know, they're showing like, we have to defeat Trump, and you know, his face is across the ad more than the guy that is running against him.
Well, yeah. Well, you never mind the advertisement. I would say more than that was a lot of people got angry. You know, like liberal establishment, like blamed like the national news media for unwittingly, but helping Trump by,
yeah.
Because they had every single one of his rallies live,
yeah.
Because for money reasons, it's a huge
crowd.
You never
know what the guy's going to say.
Yeah, people are turning the TV on. You know what I mean? But from, you know, the CNN, MSNBC, you know, it's like, look at all these yokels. My God, it's so obvious. The man is disgusting and just mocking people and da da da. But of course, you know, there's a lot of people who think like the people at the Trump rallies. You know what I mean? And so. Yeah. And again, it wasn't, I think someone else said maybe something similar to what you're thinking, is like people, candidates who are for things are do better than candidates who are against things necessarily.
Yes. Yeah.
So like you have to be doing something other than just stopping the other guy, which yeah. I guess kind of maybe what the Democrats were. We will not, you know, I can defeat. In fact, Bloomberg, who's already spent a goddamn 100 or 200 million, who they thought would run to the top, like that was his first advertisement, was like showing all these Trump tweets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a scared of me. I'm going to get rid of him. Da da da. And you know, you don't even know what he's for almost. But yeah. For a lot of people, voting in for anyone against Trump obviously is a good explanation. But
yeah. I've got a. This is kind of a little stupid bet, but I'm almost certain I'm going to win. Can a president get impeached twice in the same term?
I guess so, because before you have specific articles of impeachment over this is what. Now, if they came back with a different article of impeachment, like straight up treason or something like that, I'm guessing as long as the charges are different.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you can't be tried. Once you're acquitted of murder, even if you get a bunch of new information or data, you can't charge the guy again.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so,
if you charge him for rape and he gets off it, but then we find he's for murder, well, obviously then you can
Yeah.
But somebody, so some, you lost the bet and then someone wanted to make the bet again with you. Is that what happened? He's like, oh, I'll double or nothing. He gets impeached again. Is that what happened? Or
yeah, no, if he gets impeached again, I owe him 100. If he doesn't, I win $25. That seemed like a sure $25 to me.
If the Democrats are smart, they're done with all that shit. They got to focus on winning the election. And it's obviously.
Okay.
And, yeah.
This is the interesting one. Okay. A Deadpool bet. Okay. So this bet could last 2 weeks. It could last 12 years. It's just, who's going to go first? Trump or Bernie? Trump is 73 years old. Bernie is 78.
He just had a major heart attack.
Right.
I mean,
Trump's,
I don't know.
Trump's not exactly a pillar of health. I think he eats McDonald's every day. He's probably 60 pounds overweight.
Right.
I think his only exercise is fucking golf.
I mean, like I said, the chaos ahead, they each have like a 17% chance of being assassinated in the next 6 months, too.
Right. I mean, Trump's probably closer to 23. Bernie's probably closer to 15, but I get your point.
I'm wondering when the next, I was thinking it was in India, or Midwest, in the Middle East somewhere. There's like an assassination attempt on the president. This might've been Egypt where they had used like an armed drone.
Wow.
There's got to be one of those at some point, right? With all the fucking weapons we have and the smart, that's probably, yeah, you're going to see a bomb drop in a crowd at some point.
Yeah.
You know,
but, that one's for 500. Which line would you take on that one? Who do you think will live longer?
I guess I got to say Trump will live longer just because of Bernie just had a heart attack, you know?
Okay. That's the line.
But you get older, your heart doesn't recover totally from that kind of stuff. You know, the muscle doesn't rebuild. Your health is diminished from one of those things permanently, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, if they don't get the clot in time, then whatever section of your heart that clot was blocking off now dies and the rest of the heart has to make up for it. So if it's a mild one and it's just a small percentage of their heart, then it's, you know, a blip on the radar, but a major one is very detrimental. So, okay. That's the line I took. I took Trump. I figured he's younger. He's not healthy though. That's the thing. I mean, like every Big Mac he has every day is just like probably taking a day off his life.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I just wish he would like take up swimming or something. You know?
Well, I mean, yeah, the most you, yeah, I don't know. Trump might be feel he's just omnipotent. I mean, he does, but so he would be the one least likely to follow a doctor's advice, probably.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure someone has told him he can't have, you know, Big Macs all the time, but
it's not stopping him. He just always looks like so unstressed, though, doesn't he? Doesn't he just look like just nothing fucking bothers him?
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, there's certainly that's I'm sorry. That's definitely the upside of the narcissistic personality disorder, I would think.
Yeah.
If everyone's inferior to you, you're not gonna get nothing to prove or whatever. Well, I won't even break into Trump's psychology. Steve, WSOP schedule's out.
Oh, they came out with the full schedule?
I believe it's all, the whole thing's out.
Nice.
A lot of online events this year.
Hmm.
Like, yeah, I don't know how many. I want to say that there's like 8 or 10 or something, like a lot of them. But I don't know. You have any idea? Probably like 3 weeks or what do you?
Yeah, I think 3 weeks. I want to be out there for the Big 50. So I'm going to hit, that starts May 28th. I'll be out there by then. Shoot, I don't know. I think probably 3 or 4 bullets at that one. And then from there, I don't see the full schedule here. Oh, schedule. I just saw the abbreviated.
Well, the weekend one. After the Big 50, the weekend after the Big 50 is a millionaire maker.
Yeah.
So that might be a good come and be there for like 10 days, play those two events, a couple 1500s during the week, maybe a Planet Hollywood or something.
Yeah.
That's always fun for me when the Planet Hollywood, Venetian, and Wynn all come out with their summer schedule. They wait for the WSOP and then come out with theirs.
Yeah.
And then you can look and, you know, have fun deciding where you're going to go.
Yeah. 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 Are you going to go out?
I don't know. We'll see. I have all these goals I need to meet before I go out. I'm sure I will at some point there, you know. Okay. I'll probably end up going out. I just told myself I will not spend more than like $5,000 of my own money, because okay. The last 3 years I've lost anywhere between like 15 and 30K of my own. That's just of my own money. So, if my bankroll's low, I sell 80% just to go out and hang out with people pretty much, you know?
Yeah.
We'll see. How about, what is your, you think you'll try to sell? I know was it last year that I'm like finally convinced you to stop playing the dailies and take a shot at a couple 1Ks, and you did? I mean, are you kind of the same?
I think so. I think I'm going to sell some action. I got to charge a little bit of markup this time. I'm going to charge 1.1. I was talking with Carlos about that, and he's like, yeah, dude, you got to eat, pay for gas. Like, that's a damn good point. So I'll charge a little bit of markup. But I think it's going to be kind of the same thing. I, maybe 8 to 10K worth of buy-in, something like that. I'm excited. It's the best.
I think the one time I tried to sell with no markup, there was the least interest. Maybe it reeks of desperation.
Maybe.
You know, maybe there's, you just like, you know, I think, but last year I think I did like 1.06, 1.07 markup, which was a bargain in the world of compared to, you know, there's a lot of people who are much weaker than I, which are somehow are able to sell pieces at 1.2, 1.3, but
you know, there's something to that. It's like people don't want something for free. I've noticed that with the scholarship that I do from this show every year. Each year it gets a little bit more, and the bigger the dollar amount, the fewer people put in for it. It's kind of strange. It's almost like, I don't know. I mean, when we started out, I think the first one was $750, and then the following year it was $1,000. And man, I had like 30, 40 people putting entries in, and this, and they got to do it overnight. You know, I mean, like it comes out on Thursday and they have till Friday morning to turn in their essays. And I was getting, you know, 30, 40 people. And then last year we did 2,500. I think there was three entries. It was like, now the three entries were very good. You kind of had to wade through a lot of shit when you had 30 or 40 entries. You know what I mean? But,
right.
Yeah, I think there's something. I may go around, instead of just doing it for one school this year, I might go around to several schools so that there's a little more competition. I think there's something to that. Like, you're right. There's something about charging markup. There's something.
I think it was, I forget what business it was. I don't know if it was home cleaning or something, some sort of service business which caters to like rich people. And someone, this is anecdotal, that someone asked Trump advice, and he said, find whoever charges the most and add 10%. Because that's people will, a lot of the rich guys will just assume that's the best deal there. You're the best.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, yeah. This guy's charging 30% markup. He must be great, you know, kind of shit. So,
yeah, there's something
I think people are doing it. Well, people want the sweat too.
Yeah.
Especially if people can't go to Vegas. That's the fun part. You know,
that
every
is
time,
the fun part.
The few times that I've had a deep run, you know, the Twitter goes crazy. Everyone's going around, you know, a few people have a piece on the slate, you know, you win it, you know, your $100 can turn into 10,000.
Yep. Yeah.
It's hard to do. It's unlikely to happen, but you know, you've got a shot.
Yeah. Especially when you're getting down in the tournament, there's only 100 people left. You're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This can
happen. Got that. Yeah. So, especially people who are buying, you know, who buy 2% of your tournament. If you put a 10K package together and someone gives you $200, you know, the difference between 200 and 220 is negligible.
Yeah.
And well, of course, most of the people who certainly listen to this podcast are sophisticated enough to know that, you know, hey, this is how we help each other out, you know,
yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I'm excited. I'll be out there definitely, by May 28th, probably a few days before. I'm going to have to figure out the housing situation. my brother moved, so he doesn't live there anymore.
Oh.
And my folks are going to be renting out their winter house during that time. So maybe I'll shack up with the TPE guys, or if you want to get a place, I'm down.
Yeah, well, that's a game changer. I don't have my diamond card anymore.
Okay.
So that reduces a lot of it. You know, now if I stay in the hotel, well, they used to give me quite a few free nights or cheap nights, you know.
Yeah, they gave you like 5 nights free or something, right?
I think it's 5 nights free a month. And then, you know, but if I shot like craps, then it's, they're really. But, you know, the free parking,
yeah.
Not having to pay the resort fees is huge if you stay in the hotel, whatever that is, $25 a night, you know. Internet, they give you free rather than 50. So the hotels become all of a sudden like ridiculously expensive if I lose the diamond. And, you know, I like the check-in thing is a pain in the ass too, the hotels now. When you do, you know, normally I just go into the VIP lounge, whatever that is.
Yeah.
For sometimes those lines to check into the Rio can be fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Depending on what time you're going, you know. So, yeah, that kind of sucks. Yeah, I got a buddy who's got a house in Vegas, and he'll let me crash there probably. Yeah, but, you know, again, like last year, the TPE house, I think they were out for just a week, right?
Yeah, they weren't out very long. It was like a week or 10 days.
You know, they're all – that whole crew is getting older and, you know, families and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm sure they'll be out there for at least a week, I would think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'll have to work something out. Like I said, I don't know if – of course, Alex is kind of retired from being a – you know, so his crew that rents a house isn't – going to be doing that, I'm guessing. Or, you know, I wouldn't know, but.
I wonder what Mike's going to do. Mike Pearson?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'll have to get with him. Yeah, but I'll have to get some kind of housing situation sorted out, do an Airbnb or something. I don't know. But
see, we're always, I'm always, you know, lamenting my artistic dreams, which I've, you know, might have given, you know, tried every goddamn everything that you could do, and writing a book and writing screenplays and act. My son's getting on me to write a book.
Really?
Which is kind of funny. Because he's like, do you know if you just wrote a page a day? Because it's funny, this is like a self-help thing a lot of writers will do. And, you know, just write a page a day. There's probably like 10 books on writing that actually have that title, Page a Day. But it's, I don't know if he heard that somewhere, if he came up on his own, but it's kind of does make it sound ridiculously simple. All you got to do is write a page a day. At the end of the year, you got 365 pages. That's a
book. Yeah. What would you write it on?
Oh, I got a lot of shit that I've got so many notebooks of half, you know, something poker wise, I guess, you know, just something, write what you know about. That would be the new, what I've learned is limit your creativity. That makes sense. You know what I mean? Just like write what is in front of you. So if I do that, so yeah. Whereas, so, yeah, I feel like, I mean, obviously, I have to play a lot of poker. So, you know, I got a built-in excuse there. But let's just say I'm playing better and my hourly's up and I'm paying the bills and even able to save a little money. And first of all, rather than working that extra 40 hours to try to scrape together extra Vegas money, like those hours spent writing or reading or doing something creative could lead to for professional and personal reasons, probably is the way to go. But well, we talked a little about the Patreon possibility. So I just feel like I wish I had like one thing I needed to do now, whether it was write a book or create, but the, I don't know. Hopefully the year's still young, Steve. Hopefully I become inspired here, you know, but like I said, I'm writing the book and I looked at, you know, the local acting classes think, and like, I'm like, well, you know, I pulled an old screenplay out of the box. I'm like, oh, I can change this and that. I got up, but where do I meet the actors? Okay. Let's take an acting class and get it, you know.
You know, I've heard a lot of, I might get back. I did a little bit of acting when I was a kid, and by acting, I mean, I went to a bunch of, auditions and never got anything. But it's always interested me, and I can picture myself getting into that once I'm no longer a fireman. But that seems kind of right up your alley. I mean, maybe like I've heard a great way to get into acting is to do like improv. You know, get with an improv. What do they call them? Groundlings or damn it, I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I already know like what it would be. I wouldn't really be truly an actor. I would be, you know, I could do a cool little independent movie where I have like some role in it, but in terms of like going and delivering soliloquies on stage or, you know, perform, like that fills me with terror.
Okay.
Clayton called me out on that. He's like, if you don't have the balls to come to the stage, don't show up at my comedy club or something. I forget what. He got me there. He knew he was telling the truth too.
I think you would do quite well in the stand-up. You just got to have a 3x5 card with a few stories on it. You know, just get like a little 5-minute bit down and then just expand, you know. That's, but it's like anything else. So you just got to put the time in.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the other thing too, is probably if I had a good idea and could competently set, I think getting money for it, which is usually like the most ridiculously hard part of the process, is something I might be able to do. I'm talking about if it's, you know, not making a major production. I'm talking about getting $10,000 to like buy myself a camera and make a movie. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Have some money over to buy food for the so-and-so and maybe like a little bit for the producer who's going to make sure we get some talented people and get it into a couple film, you know? So, but I'm not even going to go to that, to the stage of like knocking on people's doors and bugging them for money until I, you know, I feel like I have, yeah, the money is the least part of the problem. I mean, fuck it, you can shoot it on your iPhone. But maybe the Patreon is the way to do that too. Like, pretend this is the scene from such and such movie. Give me more and you'll see the whole thing, kind of thing. You know, that's pretty typical too, where you shoot like the first 10 pages of a script and then you go out and try to find someone to produce it and give you some money for it.
Okay, almost like a pilot.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. My mind has been afire with ideas lately. I've actually had the little notebook in the card room, been writing some shit down, but you know, those fires die out quickly in my
it's like a flash
cavernous
fire.
Empty mind here,
like pouring gasoline on the concrete, lighting it, it just produces an intense flame for 4 to 5 seconds and then
yes, you know, that's a good analogy, Steve.
Yeah.
thank you for leaving me with that confidence destroyer. You self-help guru fuck, you're fired. You're no longer my mentor, buddy.
You got to pour that gasoline on some wood so it has some sustenance, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll see about next. How far a drive are you? Where the hell is it from San Diego to, what do we say? It's like 2.5 hours?
It's to Dodger Stadium. That's where it starts, and it ends in Santa Monica at the down by the beach.
Well, that's really not that far.
It's not far, no.
Fuck. But,
my mom and dad will be there.
I actually got a buddy who lives in Santa Monica. So this is on Saturday?
This is Sunday, the 8th.
Oh, I got my son. Perfect. Okay. I got an excuse.
Okay.
There you go. No, I'm kidding. I can maybe switch or maybe, yeah.
Okay. If you can make it out, that'd be great. My folks will, they'll be out there. They're going to meet me on mile 10 and then on mile 20 and give me, you know, a bunch of goo packs and water and stuff like that.
There's no improvisation in your world, Steve. Everything's been lined out.
I gotta give myself the best shot I can, you know. I'm even gonna change out my shoes on mile 10 because I've got two shoes right now. One is basically for short distance, but the thing when you start running long distances like this is your feet swell, and so you need to have a pair of shoes if you're gonna go run 20 or more miles. You need a pair of shoes that are about half or three quarters of a size too big. Because by the time you get up to 12 or 13 miles, your feet have swollen and now those other shoes were too small. So I'm going to run with my, because if I wear those big ones to start for the first 10 miles or so, my feet are flopping around, you know?
Right.
The shoes are too damn big. So if I can switch out and get those shoes around mile 10, then by then my feet will have swollen and they should be up to the size of the bigger long distance shoe. And hopefully that'll help. I don't know. This is my first time doing this. I really have no idea what I'm doing. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It'll be entertaining nonetheless.
I would think, Steve, if running stays a passion, that's another way to something we can add to the Barton palette for picking up women, right? Women who there's probably like social dating sites that are specifically, hey, let's go for a run or shit. You know what I mean? Or
I have noticed with like Bumble and Tinder, when I see a girl that's holding up a medal and it's obvious, you know, she's got the bib number on her shirt. I feel like I understand that world now, that before it was just like, whatever, you know, Try not to get hit by a car, honey, when you're running. You know?
Well, yeah. Just anytime, you know, Santa Monica Pier, for example, people running every night. I'm sure that's a freaking, yeah, beauty brigade out there, you know.
The runners are definitely more attractive than non-runners, I think. You know, they're generally fit and thin and, yeah.
It's, yeah, I told you when I went to, like, the Bumble, like, right away, anytime I see any of those, like, women who are hanging off the side of a cliff or something, I immediately just skip them. Doesn't matter how beautiful they are. It's like, well, you know, this is someone I can't make happy who's like that kind of active. I just can't do it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't care if it's like fucking Scarlett Johansson and 10 of her friends who are going to want to have an orgy at the top of a hill. I'm not climbing. I cannot physically do it, nor do I have any, you know.
Well, so the I will never thing. See the top of Half Dome, and I'm completely content with that.
Yeah, and just running, you know, I mean, just physically, I can't do a lot of the stuff. So
Oh, I meant to get to this last week, and I forgot. We got an email from Greg. He's got a question, not necessarily a hand. Guessing your other listeners might be curious about the same thing. I know you play on Ignition, and I've heard you reference looking over your database of played hands for leaks, etc. Do you import your Ignition hand histories into a tool database? And if so, what tools do you use to make all of that work? Thanks. Keep up the great job on the podcast. Hands down, my favorite poker-related show out there. Thank you, Greg. I use Tournament Indicator on Ignition. The thing with Ignition is it's all anonymous players. So as soon as you get into a tournament, you're assigned a number, and that number is whatever order you registered the tournament. So if there's, you know, 83 people and you register your number 84 and that's it. And as soon as you get out of the tournament, boom, it takes you to another one and you can be number 17. And all that data that you've collected on the players that were playing in that tournament is now gone. But at least you have some data that, especially if you make a final table, hopefully there's a few players at that table that you've got 60 or 80 hands on and you've got something to go on. So I use Tournament Indicator. Carlos, if you really want to get down into it, Carlos uses Hold'em Manager 2. And he's able to pull Hold'em Manager 2 up onto Tournament Indicator and use it that way. Now, you have to use some other backdoor program to be able to do that. And I don't know what it is. If you want to get a hold of Carlos and ask him about that, then go to headsuppoker.info. And
I don't think he uses Tournament Indicator. I think there's another one like Bovada. It's a specific thing with which
Bovada hands.
I forget what a converter or something. Like
something.
That.
Yeah.
But it doesn't just give you the stats for that tournament. I mean, it does. Just for that tournament, you only have stats on each player for that tournament. But if he's talking about keeping track of his entire database there to look at his performance and big blinds for 100 and his three bet, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Then I don't think Poker Indicator helps you with that.
Tournament Indicator. No, tournament not really. Indicator. No.
You have to. They're the other software will make sure all your hands are logged in and for Poker Tracker, which is what I used. It worked. It kept track of all those hands.
Oh, you use Poker Tracker for Ignition?
Yes. Well, not just Poker. It doesn't work with Poker Tracker, but there's something, whatever that other software is, which, you know, I think
which you can import the hands, and now you can see that you've played 40,000 hands and you're...
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what he does with Hold'em Manager too.
Of course, the amazing thing about Ignition more than anything was why, you know, Carlos likes it, both because it's probably fun to study for him, and also is you can get the hand histories and see everybody's hand.
Yeah, yeah.
But that I think you might need another pair of software just to play that back too. I don't know, you know.
He does it. What does he use? I think he uses Hold'em Manager to play it back. Yeah, he has to use that other program to bring it into Hold'em Manager, and then from there he can replay the hands. And so he can see exactly how much is he making from, he's actually positive in the blinds, which I've never seen before. Like he's making money out of the small blind, for example, on Ignition. So
is that true?
That guy has got that side figured out. So Greg, if you want any coaching on Ignition, Carlos is the way to go for sure. For sure. But, I don't have anything else unless you got something, Mikey.
I'm willing to say goodbye to you, Steve.
Okay.
Let's try not to make it a next month before your next, I don't know who you have around the corner. It's been a while since you had Carlos on. Maybe Carlos and Andrew together.
That would be a good one.
I don't know if you can have me on there too. Four voices might be too many. You can just put the ball and gag in your mouth, Steve, after you do the intros and check back in an hour and a half.
Right on. Well, it sounds like I'll see Andrew this weekend. Possibly you. We'll see. If you can make it up, that'd be cool. If not, then it's all good. But
good luck, Steve. You don't need luck. You're prepared for this.
I think so. I think I'm as ready as I'm going to be. I went for a run this morning. Felt good. But you know, I only ran 4 miles. I've got six times that that I have to run. But yeah, we'll see. I'm excited and nervous.
Okay, bud. Well, let's check in after the race.
Let's do that.
Okay, bud. Talk to you later, man.
You have a good day, and thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
Stop watching the clock. Instead, do what the clock is doing. Just keep going. When it hurts, just keep going. When you fail, just keep going. And when you fall, just keep going. When you want to give up, just keep going. When your luck is done, just keep going. Don't stop, just keep going. No matter what, keep moving. Stopping is for quitters. If you lose, it's okay. As long as you keep going and as long as you keep moving. But if you lose and you stop, then you have failed. You're relentless, you will push farther than before, climb higher and climb to heights you've not seen. Because progress is progress. It doesn't matter if you move forward 10% or 0.01%, as long as you've moved forward. As long as you do this day in and day out, because above everything else, consistency is key. If you consistently take small steps, one day you're gonna look back and see just how far you've come. You know, I always see those guys who come into the gym and they work intensely for just 1 3-hour session and then I never see him again. I see the guy getting up at 4 a.m. for a week and then he never does it again. But the guy who trains 1 hour a day consistently all year beats the other guys. The guy who wakes up at 6 a.m. every morning consistently beats the other guy. It's about consistency, consistently moving forward. Little steps every day over the year, it's gonna add up. Small moves in the direction of your goal every day are going to add up. Soon, you're gonna be where you wanna be, but you must keep moving forward. You can't stop and you can't stand still. You gotta keep pushing and you gotta keep going and you have to be the clock. You're always running, you are always consistent and you're constant. You're not a quitter. You are not a stopper, you're a winner because you never give up. You will succeed because you're moving in the right direction.